The argument over the correct or at least best use of federal forests got a little hotter than usual this year, and that has a lot to do with the fires. Weeks of fires raging across our area, dumping huge clouds of smoke into the sky, has got a lot of people upset. But even a year of few fires includes at least some argument over federal lands. On November 1st, the U.S. House of Representatives passed the Resilient Federal Forests Act, Bill number H.R. 2936. It has only passed the House. The Senate has only now referred it to committee. We'll get opinions pro and con today and tomorrow. Today, we'll talk to Nick Smith, who's the Executive Director at Healthy Forests, Healthy Communities. Nick, welcome to the Jefferson Exchange.
Good morning. Thank you for having me on the program.
Give us a little sketch, if you would, about Healthy Forests, Healthy Communities, what you are and what you're about.
We are a nonprofit, nonpartisan coalition that advocates for active management or better management of federally owned forests. So we work with local governments, certainly the forest products industry, chambers of commerce, labor groups, and others who want to see better management of our national forests.
So break it down for us. When you say better management, what are some of the components of better management as you see it at Healthy Forests, Healthy Communities?
Well, I think there's multiple components to that. You know, we have currently over 100 million acres, according to the Forest Service, of federal forest land that are at some risk of catastrophic wildfire. And, that's due to a number of factors, certainly past forest management practices, wildfire suppression, 100 years of wildfire suppression, certainly the impacts of climate change and drought. Our forests are in serious trouble. And we believe that is a contributing factor to the larger and more severe, unnaturally severe fires that we're seeing today. On the other hand, current forest management is not serving the needs of our rural forested communities. Oregon especially has lost quite a bit of its forest products, infrastructure, and jobs. And both, I would say, environmentally and economically, current forest land management is just not working.
There are people who would certainly say that what's going on out there, the fact that there are fewer timber sales, is because the federal forest land is now conforming more closely to what the law requires.
I think, first of all, we just need to look at the conditions on the ground and whether the current approach to federal land management is working. And certainly in the Rogue Valley with the impacts of the fire, certainly Chetco Bar fire, our forests are in need of treatment and in many places thinning to reduce the risks of catastrophic wildfire and also to protect our communities.
Okay, I want to come back to thinning and some of the specifics of that just a bit, but let's get on to the bill itself, H.R. 2936, which the House passed on November 1st. Tell us about the genesis of the bill. I noticed it was introduced in June, so not really directly related, at least at first, to this year's fire season.
Well, this bill is, and a similar bill was introduced in the previous Congress, and it's a departure from past forest management bills that we've seen. And the heart of it is essentially to increase the pace and scale of forest management activities on federal lands. I mentioned the 100 million acres that are at some risk of catastrophic wildfire. The root of the issue is that the Forest Service really only treats a fraction of that amount every year. And so we have a large deficit of fuel loads on the forest that we need treatment. I think what's well known, at least in this debate, is that over half of the Forest Service budget now pays to fight today's larger and more severe fires, and the practice of fire borrowing, where the Forest Service must raid non-fire accounts to pay for wildfire suppression, is disrupting efforts for preventative forest health. And so the Resilient Federal Forests Act, in addition to fixing that federal wildfire funding, it's aimed at reducing the cost and time it takes for agencies to implement projects on forests that are at immediate risk of wildfire, insects, and disease.
So of the two issues there, then, environmental issues and laws versus funding, I mean, is there some perception in your group anyway of which is the bigger issue that stops things from happening in the forests?
Well, you know, I think both are, you know, funding and process are both important. But, you know, I think we need to look at the process and whether that is, you know, serving the needs of our forests and our communities. You know, under the current process, you know, for an average environmental impact statement under NEPA, the National Environmental Policy Act, it takes 4.5 years on average to complete an EIS, and that time is just is increasing. It increases more than 34 days per year. The costs of doing that paperwork alone, according to the U.S. Senate, is $365 million a year. So the Forest Service, you know, needs funding to do work. It needs personnel to do work. But when we're in a process where it takes the Forest Service 4.5 years just to develop a project to cut a tree, you know, that is not going to allow us to, you know, increase that, that pace and scale of forest management.
All right, we'll get to mechanisms and how we're talking about increasing the pace here with Nick Smith, the Executive Director of Healthy Forests, Healthy Communities, speaking in favor of the Resilient Federal Forests Act. After your House of Representatives 2936 passed the House November 1st with support from Greg Walden from Oregon's 2nd District and Kurt Schrader from one of the other Oregon congressional districts as well. You can join us on the exchange at 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. The genesis of the bill, we talked about it, was introduced in June, passed in November. Bruce Westerman of Arkansas, a state in the middle of the country rather than here in the West, the major sponsor. Can you tell us a bit about where he's coming from with this?
Well, he is a certified forester. He's the only forester in the United States Congress. And Congressman Westerman, I think by virtue of his education and training, is a point person on federal forest management in general. But certainly the you know, his product, the Resilient Federal Forest Act, includes input from a lot of folks in the western states, and including Congressman Greg Walden.
All right, yeah. Walden was a sponsor of the bill, too, correct, wasn't he?
That's correct.
All right. So given that it's introduced from somebody not from the West, I mean, is this sort of a one-size-fits-all bill for forests in all kinds of places all across the country, or is it more focused on the kinds of conditions we have in the West?
Well, you know, what I would say is, at its heart, the Resilient Forest Federal Forest Act is a forestry bill. It's not a logging bill, and that's an important distinction to make, because the bill itself does not mandate or require any logging on any forest project that would occur under the bill. In fact, it doesn't impose any specific forestry prescriptions.
No cut numbers, no board footage, nothing like that?
No. You know, what it does is it gives federal land managers what are called categorical exclusions under NEPA to enable them to more quickly develop forest projects using a wide range of tools, whether it's thinning, prescribed burning, whatever tool that is. Federal land managers can choose, you know, where the treatments are needed, can choose, you know, whichever forest management activity that is most effective, that's supported by science and is suitable to the forest. And so, you know, what it does is, you know, as I said earlier, the heart of it is, you know, to give federal land agencies the ability to develop and implement projects more quickly, specifically those forests that are at immediate risk of wildfire, insects, and disease.
You mentioned the term categorical exclusion. That does appear in there several times. Just looking at the titles of the bill, it's easy to get the sense that this is more about legal practice than about forest practice. Is that a fair assessment?
Well, you know, I think the bill addresses the process, and you know, really one of the major impediments to increasing the pace and scale is the cost and time it takes for the Forest Service to develop and implement projects. And so, you know, categorical exclusions, you know, once again, something that already exists under NEPA, something that actually already exists for forestry, just on a much smaller scale. Federal land managers could use these expanded CEs to do, you know, reasonable projects more quickly.
Well, let me bring folks back into the circuit here. As we talk about NEPA, the National Environmental Policy Act, this is the federal law that does require things like environmental impact statements on projects like pretty much every timber sale ever, right?
That's correct. Yeah.
Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, in any case, you know, categorical exclusions do not absolve the agency from doing scoping work, you know, which is subject to public input, you know, cumulative effects analysis or public participation.
All right. So I understand that one of the things that we're looking at here is that in some of the wording in the Resilient Federal Forests Act, environmental impact statements, rather than having a range of alternatives, often like A through D, A through E, one of which is a no action alternative, there would just be two, which is basically two.
I mean, that would apply in cases where a forest project is the product of collaboration. Forest collaboratives, which have found some success in the Northwest, particularly in eastern Oregon, northeast Washington, where diverse interests come together to, you know, come up with forest projects. There is a provision in the Resilient Federal Forest Act that gives, you know, the Forest Service the ability to do action and no action alternatives for those types of projects.
So some level of agreement comes out of the collaborative first, and that is the action alternative versus just not doing anything.
That is correct.
All right. So when you talk about NEPA often taking 4.5 years to get, for example, timber sales, I think it was what you were talking about, timber sales. But so how would you, do you speed that up, though?
Well, a categorical exclusion, the paperwork requirements are not at a scale as they are with an environmental impact statement. You know, an environmental impact statement, you know, it takes so long because the Forest Service has to produce hundreds and hundreds of pages of analysis, even if the project doesn't do any significant harm to the environment. You know, categorical exclusion still requires you know, a high level of analysis, but you know the categorical exclusion, you know, results in less paperwork, and it just takes less time for that process to complete.
Who gets to say that there's a categorical exclusion, though? I mean, I'm just trying to figure out who the players are here as this bill lines up if it passes.
Well, so categorical exclusions are tools. You know, they're efficiencies that the Forest Service could choose to use or not, and it is up to the Forest Service leadership, you know, whether in Washington, D.C. or at the regional level, to decide, you know, we have a forest that is dangerously overgrown and you know, ready to ignite. We really need to get in there and do some treatments to thin out, to reduce the fuel loads. You know, there's no significant impact on, you know, vulnerable species. This is the type of project that, you know, a categorical exclusion would be suitable for a project. It's just simply this kind of tool on this scale just doesn't exist under the current process.
We're talking about the Resilient Federal Forests Act, H.R. 2936, passed in the U.S. House on November 1st. Greg Walden was one of the sponsors from Oregon's 2nd Congressional District, which includes the Rogue Valley. It is in the Senate now, but has not emerged from committee at this point. And we're talking to Nick Smith, who's the executive director at Healthy Forests, Healthy Communities, about the argument in favor, the pro-timber argument. You can join us on the exchange at 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. Tomorrow at this time, we'll hear from George Sexton from KS Wild with a different view of this. We have an email here from David in Ashland, who writes, the United States needs to decouple funding firefighting from the Forest Service and move it to FEMA. Prescribed fire is what is needed more than old logging practices other than selective cutting. David concludes, clear-cut logging makes even-age plantations that burn up. Some thoughts from you about that, Nick?
Well, you know, I guess what I would say is that, you know, the current approach, you know, how we're managing our forests right now are not working. And you know, whether firefighting should be decoupled from the Forest Service, you know, I'm not sure. I mean, you know, certainly the Forest Service is turning into the fire service in that, you know, most of the agency spending is now going to pay for wildfire suppression, and that comes at a cost of you know the management of our forest lands. You know, as far as you know, the other parts of that comment, you know, I think we need to look at forests. You know, there should be no one size fits all approach. We need to look at each forest, and we need to determine, you know, what needs to be done on the ground to ensure that those forests are healthy, that they're resilient to fire, to natural fire, and that we're giving our federal land agencies the tools to do the work that they need to do.
To get to a real base level that a lot of people are still concerned about, though, does this mean if you're talking about things that make resilient forests, are you ruling out clear cutting?
Well, there's nothing in this bill that requires or mandates clear cutting. You know, that kind of, you know, clear cutting regeneration harvest is suitable to some landscapes and tree species, but it's not to others. And you know, this bill does not result in clear cutting. It gives the federal land managers the ability to apply whatever forestry prescriptions are right for the landscape.
We talked about ways to speed up and streamline the process, which includes a chance to move things faster with less comment, less challenge. I notice here there's even stuff in the bill about plaintiffs who file suit not getting their attorney fees repaid. I mean, so this is essentially making it more expensive to challenge federal actions on lands.
Well, what the bill attempts to do there is really to address the issue of obstruction for the sake of obstruction. The bill doesn't prevent anyone from suing the Forest Service to stop a forest health project. If the Forest Service is not following the law, people can take that issue to court, and the courts can address that. Yes, it does prevent those groups who, you know, just simply want to obstruct to tie up a project in court and to get attorney's fees. But it doesn't stop anybody from suing the Forest Service over a project. It doesn't prevent anybody from seeking a preliminary injunction against the project. It just simply limits a preliminary injunction to 60 days, and injunctions can be renewed if new information on a project is presented to the court.
This is the kind of thing that often scares people who want a lighter touch on the land, the idea that their voices won't be heard in the process. I mean, you know some of the history, I'm sure, the rider from hell and some of the other terms that people have applied to things that reduce the amount of chance for judicial or administrative appeal. What do you say to them?
Well, it's a good question. I mean, I think what I'll say, first of all, is that any project under this bill that would happen under this bill must be consistent with existing forest plans. So, you know, if there are, you know, restrictions in a forest plan on, you know, cutting old growth logs, you know, this project is not going to cut old growth. The bill doesn't apply to wilderness areas or roadless areas or anywhere timber harvest is prohibited by law. The Forest Service on a project under this bill must do scoping. It must produce a document that explains, you know, why they need to do this project, why they need to do it now, and that project is open for public comment and input.
We have an email here from Grumpy John in Grants Pass who writes, "Your speaker is decidedly coy about the previous plundering logging practices that led to the destruction of fire-tolerant old growth. The ravenous low-hanging fruits policy is their chosen methods, and monoculture replanting, if replanting is done at all, doesn't help them either, make them pay for their previous plundering practices." Is it plundering, you think?
Well, you know, I'm not going to relitigate the timber wars of the past. You know, as I said, we have 100 million acres of federal forest land that are at risk of catastrophic wildfire. Certainly that is a result of past forest practices. There's no doubt about that. And also wildfire suppression. You know, we need to look forward, and we need to figure out, you know, what needs to be done to adapt our forests to the impacts of climate change and drought. And yes, you know, that involves cutting some trees. You know, I think most people understand that, you know, you have to cut some trees sometimes to keep a forest healthy. And the Resilient Federal Forests Act just gives federal land agencies the tools to do that work more quickly at a pace that we need.
But are we talking about, when we talk about making healthier forests and thinning things out, thinning is often the term used here. I mean, we talk about taking out some pretty good-sized trees. I mean, we're talking merchantable timber will be removed, won't it?
Well, it depends on the project. Mm-hmm. You know, on some projects, you know, maybe there isn't merchantable timber. Maybe there is. This is not a logging bill. It's a forestry bill. Timber can certainly be a byproduct of that work. But, you know, whether it's thinning, prescribed fire, this bill, you know, enables federal land managers to do that work more quickly.
So, Mick Smith, we're almost out of time here. The we had some mixed success in the House. I mean, it was pretty much a straight party vote with some defections one way or the other. Peter DeFazio, District 4, obviously Willamette National Forest and some other big federal forests within his district. Greg Walden, a supporter of the bill. I should have mentioned Peter DeFazio voted against it. Now, so what happens in the Senate? I mean, what do you think the chances are in the Senate? You got some wary looks, it sounds like, from both of the Oregon senators.
Yeah, I mean, I think the Resilient Federal Forests Act, you know, this bill in its form, I think is unlikely to pass the Senate. But, you know, I think if you look at legislation that's been introduced in both the House and the Senate, both Republicans and Democrats have proposed bills that, you know, maybe aren't as wide a scope as the Resilient Federal Forests Act, but are in similar in concept and in terms of providing those categorical exclusions to expedite certain projects. And the hope is that the U.S. Senate can decide an approach that it favors, that it actually takes action, because it has never passed a bill that deals with these issues, and there's some kind of bipartisan compromise.
All right. Well, eyes on the Senate once again for the Resilient Federal Forests Act, House of Representatives Bill 2936. Greg Walden, one of the sponsors. Nick Smith, one of the supporters. He's the executive director of Healthy Forests, Healthy Communities. Nick, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
All right. Take it easy.